Yes, dear.
So you were saying that you wouldn't want your kids to come to you for advice, and they need to go to scripture and pray first. And then you'd rather have them go somewhere else for godly counsel.
No, I didn't say that. What I said was this. I said, when they call me and ask for advice, I ask them, first of all, to seek God, to seek His Word, to get the answers from God. If they don't get the answers from God, call me.
So they would come to you?
Yeah, oh yeah, they'd come to me. They're not going to go to somebody else, they're going to come to Dad. But my whole thing was this, is that I believe that we raised our children enough to know where to get the answers at. And so I asked them first to seek God. Because I know that if they seek Him, He's going to give them the right answer. And I don't want to give them the wrong answer. You know, and so I've really never had anybody of them call me back. Later on, one of them said to me, he said, Dad, remember I called you a while back? And I said, yeah. He said, I did make a decision, but I want to ask you about that decision. Do you think I did right? And I said, well, I've always said to them, well, son, did it work out? Did it honor God? Was it the right decision? Well, yeah. I said, okay, it must have been the right decision then. Must have been the right decision. Because we have to teach our children that when we're gone, and we will be gone, they have to make good decisions.
Right.
And we have to teach them to teach their children to make good decisions. And as much as we want to help our children, as much as we love our children, we have to teach them independence. We really, really do need to teach them independence. And the independence is that they rely on God and they trust God. Because so many people look to others for advice. They're always running to everybody else. God is the answer.
So, like, our kids are teenagers, and, you know, we've been talking to them about that, you know, where they're getting to that age where they need to start understanding how to decipher Scripture and start making some decisions as to what God has for their life. And, you know, we're not going to tell them what they should do with their life as far as, you know, what they should go to college for, or if they should be a missionary or whatever.
Right,
you know,
I agree.
It's for them to work out with God. But what? How would you recommend, you know, because I know in my younger years, I mean, I would read my Bible every day, but I didn't understand it correctly because the teaching wasn't there. Now, our kids are getting good teaching now, but it's only been in the last couple of years. And so how do you, you know, I mean, Sam might have some ideas, but I think that, I was just wondering what you might say to kids of, you know, 15, 16, how would they start to look at Scripture? Do they just read, and answers come, or?
Well, first of all, I think that if you have a son or a daughter that is reading the Bible and they're coming to you asking questions, I think it's wonderful. I think it's really wonderful that they're doing that. And I think at that point, that's when you have to almost become like the pastor. You may have to dig. You may have to do some reading yourself. You may have to do some research yourself. And you may have to tell your son or daughter, you know, you've asked me a really good question, you know, and I don't know that I've really got the answer, but let's see if we can dig together and find it. Let's see if we can look it up together and see what the answer is. And you may need to, you can just about Google anything and you can get an answer off of your Google. You can just about get anything. You can get junk and you can get good stuff. It's all there. You have to throw out what's bad and you have to keep the good. But the answers are there. You can just about find all those answers. And it's good to do that, or even get a, you know, you might even, as you look at the Scripture, if you've studied a snuff yourself, you know that you can refer back to other Scriptures, you can refer in other places. And remember that that's the way you can do it. But if they're coming to you and they're asking you, don't walk away from it. You be right there for them. And always ask them, did you do your devotions this morning? Yes. Do you have any questions? Can Dad or Mom answer something for you that as you read this morning? A great thing to do sometimes with children is, you can't do this all the time because the schedule doesn't always allow these things, but at least once a week have a time when it's a quiet time where you all come together and say, how, you've been reading your devotion, is there anything that we can discuss, anything we can talk about? At least one. Remember, open it up to them. Let them do the talking. Let them come out. Let them do, because you're going to learn from what they say where they are. Because a lot of times children have a tendency to beat around the bush and tell you a story about something which really, did you know that boy I brought over, we were friends? You know what he did? What did he do? He did this. A lot of times what they're saying is, he didn't do this, I did this. I did this. They have a guilty conscience. And so what happens is then you got to read through the lines and say, possibly, maybe he did it. You don't tell them that, but then you pray about how you can go around to teach them not to do those things. Because that's just the way children are. Teenagers are up and down. They're everywhere. One minute they're up, one minute they're down. And all you can do is pray with them and love them and let them know, no matter how bad, no matter what they do, they can come to you. They can come to you. That's what's really important. No matter what they do, they can come to you. And they need not be afraid of coming to you. They know, they're going to know that you may not like it, but you're going to love them. You're going to love them. That's important. Because they will make bad decisions just like you did. Mm-hmm. Did that help?
I think so. I mean, I think they're more lost as to, well, how do I know what God has planned for me? You know, I mean, they occasionally come with questions, but more often than not, they're coming and telling me stuff they're learning in their Hebrew history class. Yeah. It's like, oh, I didn't know that. I never heard that. And they're telling me things. But, you know, especially our youngest, you know, he'll say, yeah, I read my two chapters today, and okay, so do you understand? Oh, yeah, I understand.
And
have any questions?
Realize they probably will change their vocation a dozen times before they really find out what they really want to do. You know, some children automatically know, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I've got a grandson, okay? He's, how old is Caleb now, eight?
Seven.
He's 7 years old. He speaks three languages fluently, okay? Wow. And he wants to be president of the United States.
Has he seen us been running lately?
Huh? He wants to be president of the United States. And you know what he did? He memorized John F. Kennedy's speech. Is that what you do? He memorized it.
Wow.
If you ask him what he's going to be, I am going to be president of the United States. Now, I don't know where that's going. I have no idea where that's going. But if you think I'm going to try to steal that from him, you're wrong. I'm not going to do that. I mean, because if that's what he wants to be, maybe I probably won't be around. But that's okay. I mean, I hope the rapture takes place before then. But, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? Children have, you know, I have another one who was going to be, he wants to be a policeman. And he's going to school to be a policeman. And he's in college for that, what do they call it? He's taking
criminal law.
Okay. I look at this kid and I say to myself, that kid can't be a policeman. He's scrawny. He's skinny. He's got no muscles. Someone will beat him to death. But you think I'm going to break him? Or you think I'm going to say you can't do that? I'm not going to do that. I'm just praying, God, please direct that boy in the right way. You know? Because, I mean, that's all you can do. Then we got to know. Yeah.
Well, one thing, too, she's talking about trying to figure out how to teach the kids about what God wants for them. You use your own personal life. I mean, I look backwards at the pastor of Green Baptist Church. How did I get here? And some of the things that happened made absolutely no sense at the time, looking forward. Looking backwards, all of a sudden I see what God was doing to get me here. But it took until I took the first sermon at Berean, this is what God had in mind. But he was preparing me the whole time. So if you don't know what you're doing right now, that's very uncommon.
And are they boys and girls? Both boys?
Huh?
Three boys.
Boys are different than girls. Boys are a lot different. Boys have a tendency to lean in one direction, and then they'll go to another direction, and depending upon their friends and the people that they run with,
right.
It all basically goes along with a lot of that, because they got a buddy that wants to be an engineer, and they say, well, I don't want to be an engineer, or, you know, so the thing about it is pray with them, and when you have your devotions, just say, okay, now just pray about what God wants you to do. And remember that he could open some doors, and keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, listen to what God is saying to you. Don't try to lead them into something that it's not right. I one of the biggest problems I, as a pastor and preacher for many, many years as I've been, I saw some of my friends actually force their children into the ministry. And that's the worst thing to do. So we never did that. We told them, if you want to go to the ministry, if God calls you to the ministry, that's your calling. I'll help you any way I can. And one thing we did do is all of our children have been through college. They've all graduated from college. They all have got, we raised them to work. We raised them to make a living. We raised them to be independent. And I can honestly say this, that we are so proud that our children are very independent. They all own homes. They all live pretty good. I'd like to see them in church a little bit more. I really would. But the fact is that their jobs are so demanding that a lot of times they can't get there like they need to get there. And but they're doing good. They got good wives. They love their wife. They're getting along okay. And what else can a parent ask for? I know they're saved. I know they're saved. And I know in time they'll find their way. And that's what's important, is you can, because a lot of kids end up coming home and they never get a job, they never do anything. They just teach your children to be independent to do that. That's really important, I think. I think that's the most important thing. And a lot of Christians sometimes, you know, they shelter their children so much. Sometimes it's like my son, he went 2 years to public school, he'd never gone before. And he said to me, he said, Dad, I'm taking my Bible. He carried his Bible to school every day. He got teased for carrying his Bible. But you know what? He said, doesn't bother me. He went out for a football team and made first string. He set his Bible now right next to him, right there on the bench. And he told the guys, he said, see this? This is the strongest thing I got. You come playing with me and I'll just use this on you. So, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things, but kids change their mind. They go different directions. Oh, yeah. All you can do is pray that they'll go right. Once they leave home, you have very little to say. Dr. Jack Hiles used to say, and I don't use him very often as a quote, but he made a quote one time. He told all the pastors, he said, you think you have problems when they're at home? Wait till they get grown. Because then you have no say.
Yeah.
All you can do is watch them. And that hurts more than anything else. When they were young, you could pick them up and spank their butts. Mm-hmm. But now that they're grown, you can't do anything. All you can do is say, oh, God, please help them. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Anybody want to share anything?
I have a daughter that I work basically in the same department. Granted, my life hasn't been a perfect life. I got divorced when I was in my 30s. And she was grown up at the time. I had 3 kids, a boy, 2 girls. At the point in time right now, I have 2 kids that love me and 1 that doesn't. And the one that doesn't is one that I work near at work, see her every day. It bothers me, it hurts me. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how to reach out to her. She hates me because I divorced her mother. Mm-hmm. She's been through 3 divorces.
Wow.
I told her I love her. I told her I don't hold nothing against her. And I know you hate me, but I said, I still love you. She looks at me and turns the other way when I go by her. It bothers me, but I've kind of put a shell on. Talking about it like this really hurts, but when I work and I go by her, I just walk by her like she's just a stranger. Because if I stop to say anything, I'll probably fall to pieces. I don't know how to handle it.
You've just handled it.
I prayed.
You've just handled it. Hmm? You just handled it. You know how you handle it? You go to her and you fall to pieces. You go to her and you fall to pieces. You go to her and you give her your heart. She thinks you're maybe hard, and when she sees that this is so travailing upon you, you know, that tells you where she's really at. If it doesn't bother her, if it doesn't bother her when you do that, then you know how hard she is, and all you can do is pray for that hardness. Because, I mean, but, you know, the only way you're going to know is to go to her. The Bible says that when we have fault against our brethren or against anyone, it says we go to them. We're supposed to go to them. She doesn't know your feelings. You're assuming she knows your feelings. She doesn't know your heart. Your heart is broken. So let her see your heart. Tell her the truth. Say, I'm broken up, honey. I love you, and I know I've probably failed. God knows I failed, but I can't go back, and all I can do is love you now and love you more than ever. And that's what you have to do. You have to show that love to her. And down deep inside, by walking away and by not saying anything, and if she's willing to talk with you, that's going to be, that's the thing that's so important. She's willing to listen to you. Sometimes they get to that place, they won't even listen. They won't do nothing. They're just hard. I mean, they've made up their mind, that's where it's at. And that happens, it happens a lot today, more than usual. I can't tell you the number of families that Susan and I talk to that have children that have just totally turned their back on their parents completely and won't even talk to them, won't even speak to them, won't have anything to do with them. So, I mean, but you have an obligation as dad to go. And remember one thing, dads always are closer to the girls. Girls love their daddies. They love their daddies. They really do. No matter sometimes how bad they are even, they still love them. So go to them. That's the only answer I could give you. It would be go to them.
So the sons are closer to their mothers?
Yes. Sons will always, they always stay close to mom. It's normal, because the first, and remember one thing, ladies, you married a big baby.
Me?
You married a big baby. Every woman marries a big baby.
Well, we must be backwards, because I severed ties with my parents, and he left when he was 18 and never really had
another. But do you see, you married a big baby. Boys lean on their mother. They remember the breasts. They remember the warmth of the mother. They remember all of that. So maybe he doesn't, but it's
I don't.
Okay. I didn't have a lot of that either. But the thing was, is no matter what, my situation is a little different. When I was born, my mother didn't want me, okay? She didn't want me. She wanted to give me away. She didn't want me at all. But I grew on her. The thing is that I don't know, there's something about the woman, the man really, that's why God brought the woman and man together. A man likes to be held. He really does. A woman likes to be held, but a man likes to be held more. He wants to feel the warmth of his wife. And as you get older and your marriage even gets greater, the warmth of the wife even is more so. I'm so glad you're here, honey. It's good to feel you. It's good to have your presence. And the woman, she's different. The woman is she wants a mother. she's motherly. And if the husband accepts that motherly thing, marriage can be wonderful, because she wants the mother. She wants to protect him. She wants to keep him well. She wants to do all that. That's part of the motherly instinct. And so a man marries a woman because he's really looking for another mother.
Well, good thing he wasn't looking for a mother.
She's actually a lot like her mom.
Huh?
She's a lot like her mom.
See, there you go. See, that's exactly what I'm saying. A man marries a woman very much like his mother. Very much like his mother. And it's just the way they pick them. It's just because the mother has a tremendous amount of influence on the boy, as well as the father has a tremendous amount of influence on the girl. Because the girl's daddy was always there. Daddy was always protecting. Daddy would come sit on my lap, and the girl would love just to sit on daddy's lap. I remember my girls, I'd have one on this lap and another one on this lap, and they wouldn't call it on my neck. You know, so I mean, you know, that was the girl. My boys, they didn't want to hug on me. They didn't want to do that. But in the middle of the night, they'd wake up and they'd say, "Can I come sleep with you?" And who would they go next to? Right next to mama. That's who they'd go next to, right next to mama. They didn't come next to me. They went next to mama. You know who my boys talk to now? Their mother.
Oh, really?
They talk to their mother. They call her. They don't call me.
I used to call my mom. Hey, mom, I got a question for you.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Ask
your
dad.
I'd call and my father would pick up the phone. He said, "I'll just a minute. I'll get your mom."
I don't know if it's the end of the way. I was old with my dad. Some of that has to be the firstborn. I was firstborn.
Yeah.
So it seems like firstborns are more toward the dads than the second born and third born.
Yeah.
From the Air Force, the fighters. And we have a whole bunch of fighter pilots there. How many of you are firstborns? Every one of them raised their hands.
Yeah.
The other ones would go to other things. So I think there's a few more family dynamics in there.
Well, yeah. Now, like, I was the only child for 16 years. And then I had a brother born.
Wow.
And I was on my way to the military at 17, so I only saw my brother for a year. So, I mean, you know, but, I mean, that's the way it was. And the only thing that saved my mother and dad's marriage was my brother. Because they were heading for divorce court.
Oh.
And then my mother came up pregnant. And so they decided to stay together because of that. But the marriage was gone. It was over. It was done. It was just totally, completely done. But see, I grew up in a very different home. My mother and dad fought like two cats and dogs. I mean, they literally fought. I mean, fist and nails. They would get into this. It was one another. My mother would take a frying pan if she could get one, hit my dad up beside the head in a minute. She wouldn't think twice about it. My mother was mean. She was really, she was an old country girl, raised with 10 brothers and sisters. And so, I mean, she was tough as nails. She was tough, really, really tough. So I was raised, you know, my mother had a saying, you're a man, you're not a boy. If I cut my leg, my mother wouldn't come home and woo on it. She wouldn't say, let mommy blow on it. No, she said, get up, boy. I'm serious.
I believe you.
My mother, when I got in a fight one day. I got in a fight. I was about 9 years old. I got in a really good fight. And I came home and my nose was bloody and I was pretty messed up. My mother looked at me and she said, looks like you got in a fight, son. I said, yeah, mom and dad. Looks like you lost.
That's the other guy.
And she said, come on, son. I said, where are we going? She said, we're going down to let you win. She took me back down the street where the fight was at. And then she said, all right, well, I'm gonna monitor this. Now get to it, boys. I'm serious. My mother didn't play games. She tell me, she say, you're a man. You're a man. You may be mommy's little man, but you're a man. But, I mean, that's the way I was brought up, you know. You don't cry. I never cried. When I was a kid, I never cried. Never once. Because my daddy would look at me and say, what are you doing? You don't cry. Men don't cry. I remember the first time I cried. I mean, there was other times I might have cried in between. Nobody knew about it. But the first time that I really, really cried was the night I got saved.
I was going to say, that's really unhealthy. Yeah. To tell a boy it's not okay to cry.
Yeah. But that's the way I was raised. I was
typical. Yeah. Growing up.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
That's pretty typical. Growing up.
Yeah.
Get up. Take care of it. Oh, push yeah. yourself off. Yeah. Move on.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's where maybe I don't know if it's the access to information or there's been more research done or what, but I swore I'd never do to my kids what my parents did to me, because I needed help as a teenager, and I was told, pull yourself up by your bootstrap. You're just fine. Well, I wasn't just fine, you know, and so I kept...
She wasn't just fine.
I wasn't. And, you know, I mean, and I would see things in my kids and go, that's not normal. That's not... Something's not right. And I would be told, oh, they're just fine. There's nothing wrong with them. You know, it took me 16 years to figure it out. Well, 14 years to figure out. But there was something wrong. You know, and but that was, I don't know if that's, because I don't know many people that do that anymore. Tell their kids, oh, you're just fine. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Now, the other side of the equation is some kids are a little too baby.
Well, that's the balance.
Yeah.
I mean, they say, I fall down, I scrape my knee. Get up. You're not hurting. It's not bleeding much.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, I know.
I know, I would always feel like, gosh, am I not mothering enough, because I don't really care. I'd be like, you'll live, you're okay, bye, see ya.
Well, you know, children are children. Each person has grown up with different environment. And parents, I think many parents, the vast majority of parents, try to do the best they can with what they have, with knowledge they have. I can't say that not every parent is really bad, because they're not. They if they didn't get it from at home, like my father, he was an orphan, okay? So my father never had a father, okay? So he didn't know how to be a father. My dad didn't know how to be a father. So when I was growing up, my father wasn't my father. I never saw my father because he always worked. And I think a reason why he worked all the time was is because he didn't want to come home, because he didn't want to face mom. Do you understand what I'm saying? So he worked all the time. So the person that had to face mom every day was me. And of course, and that was, he left it up to me. When my mother got, later on in life, when my mother really got sick, and my father, as they aged, my father said, the only person that can handle mom is David. Because I was around her. And because I knew how to deal with her, you know, and but I could deal with her. My dad could not deal with my mom, but I could deal with my mom, and I could handle the circumstances. My father avoided that; he avoided it. Now I don't blame my dad. I don't blame him for that, because that's the way he felt he had to handle it. And I don't know what he was going through. I don't know what was going through his mind. We weren't a Christian family. We didn't have God in our home. So I can't blame it on God. I can't say God didn't do anything. It just was what it was. You know, and we did everything. Susan and I made a pact when we got married. And I'll tell that to you. She's not in here, but she'll tell you this. We got married. My wife grew up in a terrible situation. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. And both of us decided, since both of us came from homes that were so bad, we said we do not want our children to grow up the way that we grew up. Now, what was so interesting about this, that's all we knew. That's all we knew was the way we grew up. So we had to be able to decipher how we could do something without doing the same thing that our parents did. And it took some time, because I can't say that I was always the best daddy. I mean, we loved our children, but I didn't know how to deal with certain things, because my father never dealt with those things. And so as I got involved in the ministry, and I started hanging out with a lot of older men that were pastors and fathers, I began to pick up a lot of things from them and ask them a lot of questions. And I was able to bring some of those things home. And some of those things were good and some of those things were bad.
So how old were you at that time?
What's that now?
How old were you when you were just getting in the ministry?
I was 25 when I got saved, okay? I finished Bible college when I was 30. So, I mean, you know, I had walked Satan's path for 25 years, you know. So, I mean, it was a big change in my life, tremendous change in my life when I got saved. You know, Susan and I were a little older. I'm a couple years older than her, but we were older. Both of us, we knew that what we wanted, and we'd made up our mind. We discussed it. We were very clear. We went into marriage very wide open. Our eyes were wide open going into marriage. And we knew that we were going to, there's certain things we weren't going to do, and there's certain things we were going to try to do. And we knew that God was going to be the center of it. And he always has. He always has been.
Oh, so you were saved when you got married then?
Yes, sir. Oh. Yes, sir. I got saved in October of 1969 and got married in February of 1970. I knew my wife in all of 5 months. She was the one who got me to go to church. She was the one who got me in the church. She was there when I got saved. It was her influence that brought me to God.
So you really do owe her everything.
Yes. It was her influence. The thing about it was, is I saw in her, remember now, I grew up in a really bad circumstance. She grew up in a bad circumstance. But she withdrew from that bad circumstance and went on her own and decided that she didn't want to be like that. So she had a relationship with God, and I didn't. And so she was a really, really sweet girl. I mean, really. Well, first time I saw her, I thought to myself, dear God, that woman doesn't need to be out. She needs to be home protected. You know, because she was so naive. I mean, she knew nothing, you know. And I mean, so the thing about it was, is that we started on the right ground. And because we started on the right ground, we could always look back. And we told each other we'd always be honest with one another. We said that we'd always, agreement we had was, is if you ever find somebody else, don't cheat on me, just tell me. You know, we were up front about everything. Because you have to understand that we were just coming in. Susan had grown up in the church, but she didn't know a whole lot about all the things because of the circumstances she had at home. So we were growing together. And both of us, we grew together. And in those first years, I got out of the will of God for a little while. God had called me to preach, and I rebelled. I didn't want to go. I did not want to go. I didn't feel deserving of it. I didn't feel that was what I was supposed to do. I didn't. You understand what I'm saying? I didn't. But God kept pulling the string, mm-hmm. pulling the string. He kept pulling the string. And Easter Sunday of 1973, I had been out of church for about 3 months, I think. And my wife would get up on Sunday morning and Wednesday night, and she would take the baby carriage, and she'd walk those children to church. And I would stay home and watch television. She never once said a word.
So you knew you were supposed to be a pastor the day you were saved?
I knew a short time after that. I knew a very short time after. I knew God had called me to something. I wasn't sure what it was. I knew God had called me to something. But I finally went to on Easter Sunday, I just come apart on Easter Sunday. I knew, and I looked over at Susan. And we hadn't had a real big discussion about this thing. And I looked over at her and I said, honey, God's called me to preach. And I've been fighting this thing. What should I do? And she looked at me, and I'll never forget what she said. She said, when I was a younger girl, she said, I went to church, and I told God that I wanted to be a pastor's wife. So what hinder you from going? And from that point, it was all the way to the ministry. It was all the way. I went to my pastor, and my pastor told me, I said, preacher, I said, you know, I've been in war. I said, I did a lot of things in war I'm not proud of. A lot of things I had to do. And if I hadn't have done them, I probably wouldn't be here. And I said, but those things still come to me. They're still there. How could God ever want to use somebody like me? I can't understand that. See, I had Catholicism in. To me, Catholicism was the priest was supposed to be, you know, perfect and clean and not a guy that did all this junk and all this stuff. You understand what I'm saying? That was my idea. I wasn't a good Catholic, but I knew a little something about it. And so here I was a mess. I really was, you know. And he said to me, he said, if God's called you to preach, you know it, and you have to follow through with it and let him do the rest. And when I went off to Bible college, I was rough as nails, man. I really was. I was rough. I was a rough character, really rough character. And they, every one of those at the Bible college said, what is that guy doing here? You know? I mean, what is he doing here? What is he here? You know, I had tattoos on my arms, and I, you know, I was, you know, I was straight. I was a straight guy, you know. And they said, there's no way. I remember one of the professors came to me and said to me, he said, why don't you go get a job? And I said, because God's called me to preach. He said, God hasn't called you to preach, boy. He don't call somebody like you to preach.
Really?
That's what he said.
Ooh. What college was this?
Huh?
Which college was this?
It was Liberty Baptist College in Lynchburg, Virginia. And Liberty Baptist College in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Huh? So that was 1978, I graduated from there. It says 74 when I was there. 74 to 78. And so I started preaching, and God began to use me. And before long, Falwell and all the rest of them, they were saying, man, we better watch this guy. He's out preaching. I was up here in New England. We had hundreds saved up here in New England, all Maine, all over this area. And so we better watch this guy. Better keep an eye on him. And so, but there were still a couple of those guys that doubted. They thought, well, I was just being in it for the showmanship or whatever it was, you know. And I wasn't. I mean, I knew what God had called me to do. I knew what I was doing. And so over the years, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I went back over to the college and met up with that same professor who said that. And he said to me, he said, David, I owe you an apology. He said, you know, when you were at Bible College, and he said, you came here, he said, I had you down as the most likely to not succeed. He said, if there was any person, if we could have gambled it and got away with it, we'd have gambled, you would have never succeeded. Mm-hmm. And he said, you have been probably one of the best success stories that we know of out of this college. Mm-hmm. He said, you have been faithful, you have stuck with it, you have done it, and all of us never thought. But that's where we made our mistake, because you see, we look at what man thinks, right, and we don't see what God thinks.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, going back to a question she had beforehand with the kids and trying to figure out, you agree with Sam on everything 100%, right?
Remember.
Now, here's the question. The kids know when you disagree with each other.
Oh, yeah.
They shouldn't.
I'm getting less vocal, but yeah.
I mean, it's not bad having the same disagreement, because maybe you're right and he's wrong. Maybe God's laying something in your heart.
Now you're laying a little bit.
The whole thing is, do that behind closed doors where the kids don't see it. Right. Otherwise, they know how to twist around, and they'll see inconsistencies.
They're already echoing her.
Yeah, it's been a long road.
Not even Mom agrees with you. I heard that the other day.
Well, it depends on the situation. There's some issues where, yeah, who's the best baseball team? Who cares about this?
But you know something.
No,
you know something. Kids will use that.
Oh yeah.
They'll say to you, "Not even Mama agrees with you." Mm-hmm. And one of the things I used to say, because Susie's not the one that ever really, at least I don't think she did, just take their side. I think that they thought maybe she took their side, maybe in some things. But I would look at them and I would say to them, I say, you know, your mother is the greatest person I know. I love her to death. But I don't know what I would do without her. But there's just some things that Mama does not know.
What I said was, I said, that might be so, but God doesn't.
Yeah. And so, you know, and so they would look at me and they'd say, my daughters would be the worst. They would turn around and say, you mean to say there's some things that Mama doesn't know? And I'd say, yeah. Now my daughters tell me, boy, Mama doesn't know that, does she? They get on me because they realize now that Susan thinks good of everybody. She cannot see. She cannot see bad in anybody. All she looks for is good. And she is just so, everybody is so good, everybody. And I keep telling her, honey, they're not. They're not.
They're not, long time ago.
They're not. But Susan does not look at anything upon anybody bad. She doesn't say anything evil about anybody. She never does any of that. She just never has. I'm the one who sits back and says, look at that dirty rat. She says, you're not supposed to say that. But I mean, you know, there's always difference, but you do have to be careful with children because they do play, especially teenagers will play you against one another, very much so. And even though you may disagree with him, or he may disagree with you, don't let them know it. Try to hide that, because then they'll have no excuse. And work out agreement between both of you of what you're going to do. Come up with if you have to compromise between one another of how you want to do it, and be together when you do it. Because that will help you, especially with teenagers. It's critical years for them now. Very, very critical years. And they need consistency. If anything they need consistency. So, you know, work it out together and come up with a compromise. If you have to. I mean, that's the best way to do it.
Compromise based on truth and word.
But there are...
I always think, what does the Bible say?
The Bible is a
tough one. Let me ask you, do you know anything about the gifts of the Spirit? Huh? You ever studied the gifts of the Spirit?
Yeah.
Okay. What would you classify yourself as your spiritual gift?
Oh, no, I don't.
What would you say you fall in the place of the spiritual gifts?
I haven't classified myself. But I don't know if I really, what's your gift, Pastor?
No, wait a minute.
I hope it's
that's the best way to ask a question.
Here's what I'm trying to say.
What is her spiritual gift?
Wait, here's what I'm getting at, is why do we have to be assigned a gift? All those gifts are ours, and we're supposed to work for them.
Okay, but there are some of them gifts, okay, that we excel in, that God, within our own nature as he's made us and created us, there are certain gifts that we are born with. There are certain talents that we're born with, and those are talents that are built into us. What would you say that your wife, her spiritual gift is? What would you say it is? Huh?
Well, she has crumpled up all of them and tossed them in the trash.
But she's still fairly newly saved.
She's still working on them.
Okay. Let me give you, for instance, my wife has a spiritual gift of mercy.
Not my wife.
Mercy. She has so much forgiveness. Pastor, what is Mary's spiritual gift?
Mercy's definitely it.
Okay, mercy. Okay. All right. There's two ladies. All right. What do you think your spiritual gift is?
I took a test online about that, and I don't remember what website it was, but it was like 100 questions.
Okay.
And it told me it was faith, knowledge, and discernment.
Okay, good. Okay, what do you, anybody else, what do you think your spiritual gift is?
My what?
Spiritual gift.
Spiritual gift? Discernment.
And use it.
You know what, like, are you a servant? Do you have a tendency to feel sorry for other people? That's mercy. Are you a teacher? Is that your spiritual gift? Are you a prophet? Do you have the gift of mercy, of teaching?
My spiritual gift is playing music.
Playing music, okay. All right, so that's your gift, music. Okay. Pastor, what's yours?
It's crunchy.
That'd be a sermon and teaching.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. Let them all see it.
All right. Now, you know what I know my spiritual gift is?
What's that?
My spiritual gift is this, prophet. It's no gray. It's either black or white. My wife will tell you that. There is no gray with me.
That's the definition of prophet?
Yeah. A prophet is the person who proclaims, who stands on a certain thing, and there is no giving. Paul was a prophet.
That's where we
okay. Paul was a prophet. Paul was he. There was no giving. Thus saith God. Okay. The prophet's problem with a prophet is because they only see black or white. It's either right or wrong. Okay. Because they see no gray, they show very little mercy. A lot of times they just basically just go. They go for the jugglers, one might say. I mean, that's the problem, okay? Now, I have learned over the years, that is my primary gift. I have learned because of that gift that I have to adjust, because that gift can get you in a lot of trouble. Because you can just... So I've had to adjust my gifts to mercy and to giving and serving. And do that because it's so important. When you understand your gifts, if he's a prophet, if he's thus saith God, and you're a prophet, you got.
I was going to say, I can see that being a big problem.
Huh?
I can see that being a big problem.
You got. Right. You understand what I'm saying?
One's a false prophet.
Yeah, we know which one that is. That's good. So. If you're a prophet and he's a prophet, you have to, you know, you've heard people say, you have to accept what I am what I am. That's not true. That's not true at all. We have to change. Somebody has to change. So we have to develop something that's secondary to that, even though our primary thing may be thus saith God. And for instance, in my situation, and in my wife's situation, she doesn't change. She's mercy and servant. That's it, plain and simple. She hadn't changed one iota. You ask her to do something, she's willing to do it. If something falls on the floor, see, if you look at the gifts, I'm trying to remember how that goes. The prophet, give me it right in order. You guys, look at in order there. I can't remember.
Oh, you don't have memorized?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Some are given apostles, prophets, pastors, teachers.
Okay, yeah.
Ephesians 3?
I think it's Ephesians 3.
I'll give you the illustration of it, okay?